Now we're off to Edinburgh for a special festival edition of a special panel game.
Welcome to Just a Minute! Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country but throughout the world, but also to welcome to the show this week four exciting and diverse personalities who've come together to play Just a Minute. And they are seated on my right, that great exponent of this game, that wonderful popular comedian Paul Merton, and seated beside him, the veteran player of the game who brings his own individual attitude to the show, that is Clement Freud, and seated on my left, another fine comedian who's got his own individual style, that is Ross Noble, and seated beside him, we have a lovely actress comedian, Janie Godley, and would you please welcome all four of them? And as usual, I'm going to ask them to speak on a subject that I will give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And seated beside me is Charlotte Davies, who will help me with the score, and she'll blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from one of the venues at the Pleasance during the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. And we have an extravagant, excited Fringe audience in front of us. Dying for us to get started. So, Janie Godley, welcome to the show. I think you'd like to start with you. So, would you like to take the subject of kangaroos? You have 60 seconds, and your time starts now.
I love kangaroos, especially the talking kind. And I like that pouch at the front because it's a bit like a shoplifting thing that they can use and maybe go through Boots the chemist and get stuff for me. Kangaroos are wonderful because they live in Australia, and I always wanted to go there and see Skippy, although he frightened me because he once drove a helicopter with his claws. And I'm not sure about a kangaroo that can do the helicopter flying thing.
Getting
to the good bit.
I know. But for the first time, 34 seconds, not bad. Right. Clement, you were the first to challenge, yes?
Yes.
Yes, I know, but I have to. I know what, must know your challenge, must to see whether I agree with it or not.
There were two helicopters.
There were two helicopters.
Oh,
well, yes, there were two helicopters.
Always happens to me.
No, it doesn't. Right. So, Clement, you have 34 seconds.
And no subtitles.
You'll need two helicopters to get out of here now.
As we enjoy that interjection of yours so much, Janie, I'm going to give you a bonus point.
Thank you.
Clement, your subject is kangaroos, and you have 34 seconds available, starting now.
D.H. Lawrence wrote a novel called Kangaroo about Australia. I'm not at all sure why, because Lady Chatterley's lover seemed to me to be absolutely adequate. Nevertheless, Kangaroo was set in Australia, which will surprise...
Well, Ross has challenged.
Repetition of Australia.
Yeah. Yes, that's right, yes.
Two Australias.
So, yeah, 18 seconds, Ross. Tell us something about kangaroos, starting now.
Who could forget the D.H. Lawrence sequel, Lady Chatterley's Kangaroo? What a ridiculous thing it was. All kinds of saucy activities bouncing around through the trees. The gardener, there he is, storing things in the pouch that he possibly shouldn't have. Australia is one of...
So at the end of that round, Ross Noble, getting that extra point for speaking as a whistle wind, has gone ahead. He's won ahead of Paul Merton, and then Clement Freud and Janie Godley follow in that order. And Ross, we'd like you to take the next round. The subject is You and Yours. Will you tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now?
You and Yours is a Scottish wrestler. He's very popular. I believe that his father originally came from Scandinavia, hence the yours. It's pronounced yoth, if you are from that neck of the woods. He had many signature manoeuvres where he would get somebody in a headlock and then flip them over onto their back and then once again repeat the...
Clement challenge.
Hesitation.
I agree with the hesitation, yes, Clement. So you take over You and Yours, and you have 34. It's interesting, it was exactly 34 seconds last time you spoke. Anyway, 34.
I think it's stuck on 34. Yes, yes.
Now, I think those who are into mysticism and numbers will have some interpretation, but we haven't got time to ponder. You and yours, with you, Clement, starting now.
These are two very odd words to have in conjunction. Yew is a tree which has very lush, lavish leaves. And yours is the...
Paul Challenge.
Hesitation.
No. Not quite, no. You have 25 seconds still available, Clement. You and yours are starting now.
Mary Ure was a great actress who was married at one time to John Osborne. And the Ures is quite simply her father and mother, her cousins, her nephews and nieces.
Paul Challenge.
There was quite a lot of her.
Yeah. Yes, there was, yes, yes. So, Paul, you have the subject. You have you and yours. You have 14 seconds starting now.
The Chav version is up you and yours, and it's a very popular show. You can pick it up on local radio stations, rather aggressive consumer reports, buy this fridge or else you will know what's going to happen to you. That kind of thing goes on. Tracksuits are very popular at this time of year. I personally have bought...
So Paul Merton was speaking then as the whistle went in. That extra point, he's increased his lead just ahead of Ross Noble, a little way ahead of Clement Freud and Janie Godley. And Clement, your turn to begin. And the subject now is healthy scepticism. Will you tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now?
Healthy scepticism is the reaction to something which is apparently untrue, certainly unlikely. For instance, Paul talking about his days at Eton. I don't go with... I admit he played the wall game with some skill, was a dry bob, and was expelled after a very short time. But I healthy scepticism...
Paul challenged.
It was a hesitation.
Yes, all that is a hesitation.
And actually, you'll find I was deputy headmaster for a number of years.
Deputy, yeah.
All right. 38 seconds available. Healthy scepticism starting now.
If we look at the planet Pluto, we can see that the Gudo.
Ross, you challenge.
The Guguru.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a planet.
Yeah.
And nearly didn't buzz in because I thought, I want to find out about Guguru.
No, we'll interpret that as hesitation. So you take over healthy scepticism, Ross, with 34 seconds starting now.
Healthy scepticism is the best way of burning calories. If you go for unhealthy scepticism, that is where you sit in a chair and look at things in a very sceptical manner. Whereas if you shoot past somebody very, very quickly in jogging pants...
Oh, yes...
The very, old, very quick. Yes. You know old, what? I'm not an educated man, and if that deputy headmaster had been better when I was at school...
It's the old trap you're so easy to walk into, but Clement, you were the first to challenge. Yes, very, very healthy scepticism is back with you, and 21 seconds starting now.
When Ross told me he had been a lifeguard at Weston-super-Mare and couldn't swim, I met that statement with healthy scepticism. It is total nonsense. He comes from Newcastle.
Ross, challenge.
Sorry, I thought that was a hesitation.
It was a hesitation.
Was it? Yes, it was. Yes.
Yes, and you've got in with 6 seconds to go on healthy scepticism, starting now.
I remember my days in Weston-super-Mare with great affection. The amount of times where I would pass. Oh, I was going to say run in slow motion, and then I went, I've already said run, no, and I'm a fool to myself. Can I have a point for challenging myself?
Yes. You didn't. Paul got in first. He challenged. Okay. So, Paul, yes. So, what was it?
Hesitation.
Hesitation, yes. And you've got in with half a second to go. Healthy scepticism, starting now.
Eton School!
Paul Merton was speaking as the whistle went gain. That extra point, he's increased his lead. But Ross got points in the round, so there's still only 2 points between the two of them and a few points between them and Clement and Janie. And Paul, your turn to begin. The subject, what cheers me up? That's the subject. Speak on it, 60 seconds if you can, starting now.
Walking around the Edinburgh Fringe during the festival is a wonderful thing. You see so many people having a good mood. I speak to taxi drivers. They say, "Hey, it's the best time of the year for us." And you can understand what they mean. If you can't understand the accent, I'll translate it for you earlier. Now, it seems to me that one of the happiest things you can do in life is to look at the planet Pluto and think to yourself, I would like to live there for a fortnight or 2 weeks, whichever is the longer. As a magnificent sphere that orbs our Earth.
Orb our Earth?
Does it orb our Earth?
No. Absolutely meaningless.
So you've got deviation then?
Yes.
Yes, it doesn't orb the Earth, yes.
I'd like it if it did.
It's quite poetic.
It's in our planetary system, anyway.
Yes.
It doesn't orb the world, Earth, does it? I don't know what I'm talking about either.
What's
it's all
the
good.
Subject again?
Roy Orbison. Well, it's orb, isn't it?
Was it?
What's the subject I've lost?
Roy Orbison. Is that what you said?
I was making an orb in my head.
I thought he just walked in.
He did.
No, Jenny, that's not the subject orb. It's what cheers me up.
All right.
And Ross has got the subject. He got 33 seconds starting now.
Roy Orbison cheers me up. Every time I go to one of his gigs, I can't help myself. I was once strolling down the road and saw two old men coming towards me. A gust of wind caught the hat of one of them. It flipped in the air and landed on the crown of the said other fellow. I laughed heartily as this occurrence happened before my very eyes. It was as if they were trained circus professionals who, for many years, had stood there waiting for this particular not geological accident.
Yeah, you went for that orb
experience.
That's
not weather, is it? Geological?
No.
Genealogical.
Genealogical. So you've challenged Janie. You've got 2 seconds to tell us something about what cheers me up starting now.
Donny Osmond.
Clement challenged.
Hesitation, I thought.
No.
I was taking a breath so you could understand me perfectly.
I think he was being generous, so you get another point.
I love him.
So you got another point there, Janie.
Thanks.
What cheers me up? 1 second left, starting now.
Come on!
That really was hesitation.
Yeah.
It really was hesitation.
I know, because it was bad word in my head.
Listen, Janie. But as you've never played the game before, I'm going to be generous to you.
Thank you.
Because I didn't give it to you again with Clement Flanders. I'm not going to give it to you now he's challenged you. You get another point for that. And you've got half a second to go, but please start when I say now.
Okay.
You've got half a second on what cheers me up, starting now.
Chocolate.
Right now. So, Janie, Godley was speaking as the whistle went then again, that extra point, and she's now leapt forward. My goodness me, she's still in third place, but she's left. She's ahead of Clement Freud, she's just behind Ross Noble, and one or two behind Paul Merton. And Janie, it's again your turn to begin. Oh, this is a good Glasgow subject, it's a good Scottish subject. Right, this brings out all my Scottish blood anyway. William McGonagall. Do you know much about William McGonagall?
No, in that accent. A wee bit.
Give us a wee bit of William McGonagall. He's got 60 seconds, starting now.
William McGonagall was known as the world's worst poet in the English language. His famous ditty was the whole one about the Tay Bridge disaster. This man hung about railway stations waiting for bad things to happen so that he could write poems about them. Some of his other poems...
It's a difficult... Clement, you've challenged.
Repetition.
Yes, poems. Right. So, you tell us something about William McGonagall with 45 seconds available, Clement, starting now.
I've always found the William McGonagall myth very strange, because normally if you have a bad poet, no one reads him. Yet, in William McGonagall's case, he seems to become increasingly famous as his verse deteriorates in every...
Ross.
There was a hesitation.
Yes, he's talking about deteriorating and he's running out of steam, really. Like a McGonagall poem. Right, so, Ross, you've got William McGonagall and you have 28 seconds starting now.
The difference between William McGonagall and Kate Eady is that he could rhyme. She would always turn up to places where there were disasters and things happening, but she didn't even bother herself to write a limerick. And that's why...
Clement challenged.
Repetition.
Of what?
Rhyme. Right.
That's right, yes. I have to ask you, Clement.
Sorry?
You might have said something else I disagreed with. So you have the subject back. You have 16 seconds. William McGonagall starting now.
I didn't know about the Tay Bridge disaster until I read William McGonagall, and I'm now probably more knowledgeable on that subject than any other awful thing that happened anywhere during the last 49 years.
I knew... And it paused.
There was a bit of a gap.
There was a hesitation. Yeah, Paul?
You could have made a ham sandwich, couldn't you, Nick?
Well, not quite a ham sandwich, but anyway, it was a correct challenge, Paul. So it's justification. They've all got points, and you've got a quarter of a second on William McGonagall starting now.
William McGonagall!
So Paul is speaking against the whistle when gained that extra point. He's increasingly just a little over... No, he's just in the same position. 2 points ahead of Ross Noble, 3 points ahead of Clement Freud, and 4 points ahead of Janie Godley. That's the situation as we move on to Ross Noble to start again. Ross, the art of mime, which is wonderful, of course, on radio. What an amazing subject for a radio show. You can't illustrate it, but talk about it 60 seconds starting now. It was one of the biggest laughs we've ever had in just a minute. I should explain to our listeners what happened. Ross took the subject, I have to explain, and he went into a mime. And the audience loved it. And this is the first time we've had mime on radio, and it's worked. And he got so carried away with the reaction he got, the only way we could stop him was for me to leave my chair and go over there and physically restrain him.
That's right.
I do have to say there was a repetition of... there was a repetition of walking against
the
wind.
I know,
which, you know, it's an easy mistake
to make. Well, I tell you what we do. Paul was the first to challenge, so he gets the subject. We're going to get back into the realms of sound radio, and we're going to give you 2 bonus points. One because the audience... One, because the audience enjoyed it so much, and also because it was so inventive. And, Paul, you challenged, and when you pressed your buzzer, there were 55 seconds to go, so please tell us...
I waited, there was about 30 seconds in. There's 55 seconds to go.
55?
Yeah.
Because you pressed your buzzer almost immediately, because he was miming, and we had 5 seconds of silence. And you pressed your buzzer... And that's when it went. Yes.
Okay, all right.
So that's all right. Please don't mime. I don't have to cut another one. Talk on the subject of the subject. Talk on the art of mime. 55 seconds starting now.
If we look at the silent comedians of the 1920s, we can see very skilled mime artists. Charlie Chaplin, Harold Lloyd, Buster Keaton, Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy all reached great heights in this rather unusual medium. If you see a mime in the street these days, as Ross indicated just now, you might see a number of various actions which you've seen before, the walking against the wind or the trapped inside the glass box. The great thing about the comedians in that era that I mentioned...
Ross Challenge.
I'm just going to interrupt, like, he's a genius on this subject. This is like, well, there's not an official thing, but he knows everything there is to know, and therefore I just thought I'd interrupt.
Ross, I've got to say, you've played the game often enough. You know, even if you know all about the subject, you still hesitate, you still repeat yourself. It's very difficult to keep going, keep that discipline of thought going.
I thought I'd beat him to it.
No. You interrupted him, actually. He was going in fine style.
Sorry.
And
let me go, I've got 55 seconds left.
You've still got 29 seconds. You've got another point. Well, you've caught your breath, Ross. It's helped you. You've caught your breath again. 29 seconds, because you get another point for being interrupted. And you start now.
Charles was perhaps the finest of all those particular comics I mentioned earlier. I can't mention... Oh, no.
That's what often happens. You get interrupted and the flow goes right. So Clement was the first to come in. And you know what it was. We all know. The Art of Mime. And you have 24 seconds starting now.
In 1215, the Magna Carta was signed at Runnymede against the will of King John.
Was it signed against a tree? Signed against a tree? It wasn't signed against the will of someone. That seems very awkward. Yes. Was it signed against a tree?
It wasn't a tree. It was against his will. He didn't want to sign it.
Doesn't that make the
handwriting shaky.
So we'll let him keep the subject. 16 seconds, Clement. The art of mime starting now.
I have several gramophone records, both 78 and 33s, of mime artists. They bore people to distraction. After dinner, I say, let us sit down, and we will get the gramophone, and I will wind it up and sharpen the needle.
So Clement Freud was then speaking as the whistle waned again. That extra point for doing so. He's now 1 point behind our leader, Paul Merton, 1 point ahead of Ross Noble, and 3 points ahead of Janie Godley. And Clement, it's also your turn to begin, so we're going to hear from you again. Oh, this is a good subject for you. How to snub somebody. No, the wording on the card, actually, I must get it right, because you mustn't be. How to snub someone. 60 seconds, starting now.
You put your arms round them and your tongue into their mouth.
Jenny, you've challenged.
He stopped for a long time.
No, he paused.
That's all right, okay.
Hesitation, yes.
Yeah.
Well, he'll get his tongue in your mouth, of course. I mean...
I get frightened.
Right, yes.
I thought that is how you snog someone.
Snub.
Right.
He sounds like a good snogger.
Shall we get the sound engineer to come back?
Is it snog or snub?
No, it is snub.
But it's snub, yeah.
It's a snub, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, cool. So, I've never had lessons how to snog before. That was wonderful.
Well, we'll talk to Clement. He obviously knows all about it. But, Janie, you did have a correct challenge. So you take over the subject, and there are 52 seconds on how to snub someone, starting now.
The best way to snub someone is stand in front of them, make funny eyes, and wave at people behind them. And every time they speak, just stick your two fingers up into their eyes. Laugh, oh.
Oh, it's a difficult game, isn't it? Right, Ross, you challenge first.
Repetition of laugh.
Yes.
No, surely not.
Yes. 42 seconds available, Ross. How to snub somebody. Someone, sorry, not someone. Starting now.
I always feel sorry for snub-nosed dolphins because it's physically impossible for them to be friendly to anyone. They simply approach them and instantly snub. At any party, should you invite that particular creature along, you will find, one, they'll be flapping around on the floor because they need to be underwater, and they'll be knocking your vol-au-vents all over the place, let alone meeting somebody, and the next thing you know, they're rolling around on the floor with Clement Freud while he snubs them.
Clement Freud challenged.
We've had floor before.
Yeah. Yes, you had two floors.
Oh, yeah.
That's right, yes. So, Clement, you have the subject back. It is snub, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And 17 seconds on how to snub someone, starting now.
If someone comes up to you, for instance, and says you're very fat, a very good reply is, it's because every time I go to bed with your wife, she gives me a biscuit.
Paul, you challenged first. Nobody challenged for quite a long time, actually. It was very interesting. They were absorbing what went on, but you eventually challenged.
Yes, well, it was sort of hesitation.
Hesitation. It was a complete full stop. But, yeah. I think he actually retired on his laurels of the volume of laughter he got. So we give him a bonus point because they obviously enjoyed the joke. And, Paul, you've gone in with 3 seconds to go. And a point, of course. How to snub someone, starting now.
Custard creams are my favourite, but indeed, if you really want to snub somebody.
So Paul Merton was speaking then when the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he's now taking the lead ahead, just ahead of Clement Freud and just ahead of Ross Noble. And Janie Godley's got a number of points, but she's still in fourth place, but does it matter? She's going to take the last round. Janie, it's my favourite nursery rhyme, and you have 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
An old lady who lived in a shoe is my favourite nursery rhyme. I don't know why this woman had so many children and then beat them with a stick and made them live inside leather. Possibly she is from the east end of Glasgow, which makes her part of my family. It was my mother, in fact, who lived there. And we are...
Clement, you challenge.
Mother, repeat.
Your mother, yes, there was.
I don't think so. I only had one mother.
I think there were two mothers.
Lived. There was two lived. You missed the two lived, but there was one mother.
Well, I'm going to overlook it, Janie, as you haven't played the game before.
Thanks. And give... Clement's looking at me like he's going to snog me. And that's frightening.
I'll get the equipment.
So, Janie, carry on with my favourite nursery rhyme, 43 seconds, starting now.
She was a scary woman in the shoe, but her...
Right, yes.
What's repetition of shoe?
Shoe, you had the shoe before.
Oh, right, well, I thought it was only in segments, sorry, no, you're right.
No, if you've used it before, even in this round, you can't use it again.
Yeah, okay.
Right, so, Paul, it's back with you, my favourite nursery rhyme, 40 seconds, starting now.
Just thinking about now my favourite nursery rhyme, I'm going to pluck one from thin air and hopefully it doesn't have too much repetition. Little Jack Horner sat in the corner, eating his curds and whey. Up came a spider and sat down beside her, and the number 7 bus goes this way. What a fantastic poem. London Transport in the 1930s produced children's book of poetry. You could read all kinds of things. The terminus that stopped at Acton. Or the bus that never went home. They were very sad stories that helped us beat Hitler in the Second World War. How many here can remember Goebbels' Happy Hour? What a puppet show that was. I still remember. What the hell am I talking about?
It doesn't matter, Paul. They loved it. But Ross, you challenged. What was it for?
Deviation.
Yes, it was from my favourite nursery rhyme. It's, well, I don't know. Could it be Goebbels' nursery
rhyme? What the hell am I talking about?
That's one of my favourite nursery rhymes.
Is...
It questions our innermost beliefs. No, don't worry.
No, I'll
give up on that one.
I give up. We're not going to justify it. Benefit of the doubt to Ross, and you have 6 seconds, Ross. My favourite nursery rhyme, starting now.
Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall, and then he came off and hurt himself quite badly. His shell was damaged, and he was...
So it remains for me to give you the final situation. Well, Janie Godley, who's not played the game before, did very well. She got quite a few points, but she did unfortunately finish in fourth place. But well done, Janie.
Thank you. Come back again.
And then ahead of her, with only 1 point separating them all, but in ascending order, it was Ross Noble, 1 point ahead Clement Freud, and 1 point ahead Paul Merton. So, Paul, we say you're the winner, but it was Even Stevens, wasn't it? Congratulations to them all. Okay. Thank you to these four delightful players of the game, Paul Merton, Ross Noble, Janie Godley and Clement Freud. I thank Charlotte Davis, who's helped me with the score and blown her whistle so delicately. We thank our producer, who is Claire Jones. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this game, and we're very indebted to this lovely audience here at the Fringe, at the Pleasance in Edinburgh, who've cheered us on our way. You've had a great time. We've had a lovely time. Thank you very much. Tune in the next time we play Just a Minute. Yes.
And Just a Minute, we'll be back in Edinburgh next week.